Welcome to the Resilient Mind Podcast. I'm Sam Bowler, and I'll be your co-host along with my wife, Natalie. Natalie is a licensed professional counselor in Nashville, Tennessee. She works primarily with survivors of complex trauma and specializes in dissociative disorders. The Resilient Mind is a platform for us and our guests to play our part in the bigger conversation around mental health. Specifically, we would like to raise awareness and understanding of complex trauma and dissociative disorders. So, whether you're a survivor yourself or you just stumbled upon this podcast, welcome to the conversation. We're glad you're here. In today's episode, we're talking about avoidance. Natalie, how does avoidance show up in the healing process and how does it impact that process?
Avoidance is a really common issue that I see day to day with my clients. It's really common when you've experienced complex developmental trauma to avoid. And part of the reason this shows up is because there are a lot of overwhelming symptoms, sometimes memories that feel really scary. It might be flashbacks. It might be body sensations, basically just things that feel like too much. And so avoidance is part of how people have learned to cope with their overwhelming emotions and other trauma symptoms. For example, it's really common to avoid your feelings, your memories, your body, and also just your overall internal experience. All of these things can feel overwhelming and completely unmanageable, and people don't really know what to do with a lot of these feelings. And it's understandable when you have experienced complex developmental trauma that you would want to avoid. It's almost like, where do you even start? How do you start to open the door to dealing with your past trauma when there have been repeated long-term traumatic experiences that you have experienced over and over again in life? So it's hard to think about how do you let just a little bit out without getting flooded with memories, emotions, or sensations, among other things.
So what are some ways that people can navigate their avoidance within their healing process?
I think first just identifying that it's problematic to avoid, although it helped you to survive at one point in your life, continuing to avoid long-term just kind of prolongs your healing process. Most therapists should be pretty accustomed to dealing with avoidance in therapy, especially if they work with trauma survivors. It's not the most common thing for somebody to come in fully ready to face their trauma without some level of ambivalence. But through therapy, you can learn various coping skills and ways to resource yourself in order to expand your window of tolerance. And basically what that means is being able to tolerate more and more over time through using different skills and resources. So for example, for sensory motor psychotherapy, that was developed by Pat Ogden, and there are different ways of resourcing that you can learn that are within your own body. And so your body's with you no matter where you are, so finding resources in your body is a great way to learn to cope in almost any situation. It allows you to befriend your body, where I think a lot of people have come to view their body as the enemy or as the part of themselves that really betrayed them. There is also yoga that helps with regulating your nervous system. And then among many other tools, there are grounding tools, containment techniques, safer, peaceful place imagery, attachment resourcing, all sorts of things that are really great in helping you to expand your window of tolerance and your ability to tolerate things that probably at this point might seem really overwhelming.
So if someone is in therapy and they're going through that process and they start to feel overwhelmed and feel like avoiding, what does that look like, and how do you help them navigate that?
Again, I think that comes up a lot in therapy. And so something that I help people to do is just come in and out of their distressful feelings, even from the very beginning. And so that might be starting with just noticing a sensation that you might be feeling in your chest for maybe only 5 seconds. And if a person starts to feel overwhelmed and panicky, then we can move the focus of your attention to somewhere else. So that might be orienting externally and naming different colors in the room, or it could be grounding through the five senses. For some, it might actually be finding a resource in the body that allows you to calm yourself or to ground and that kind of thing. It might also be something as simple as talking about something really interesting to you for a moment. So an example I would give is if I notice somebody is starting to go outside of their window of tolerance, in order to slow the pace down a little bit, I might say, hey, tell me about your favorite book that you're reading right now, or tell me about your dog. What does it feel like to be with your dog? Can you imagine feeling his fur, what it looks like when his tail wags, and what the look in his eyes would be when you get home and he's really excited to see you? But basically, we're shifting the focus from distress to something that has a more positive emotion associated with it.
Do you use, I know when I've been in therapy, I've had a tendency when going into certain things to kind of avoid. And it's interesting because it feels like the word avoidance feels like it's an active thing, but it feels like it's very subconscious a lot of times when that happens. Like suddenly you find yourself not really able to focus on the work that you wanted to do or that you intended to do. With like CRM in particular, I remember doing, having like the safe space to go to in my mind as like a grounding tool when things did get overwhelming. Do you use that specifically with people, and are there other things besides just things that are like, I guess, you know, things that they care about or like or care feel strongly about that are grounding? Do you use that or other specific tools?
I do. And so when Sam mentioned CRM, he's talking about comprehensive resource model. That is a type of therapy that was designed by Lisa Schwartz, and it was designed specifically for people with complex trauma and dissociative disorders. So yes, I do use what you're referring to as a resource. I think that what you mentioned in terms of avoiding and not even knowing you're avoiding, I think many, many times that's the case. People don't even realize that they're doing it. And sometimes people are really good at avoiding almost without anybody noticing that that is what they are doing. And so when we as therapists notice that somebody is avoiding, we help to hold up a mirror and reflect back to them what we're seeing. And so as you have somebody who is very attuned and is able to notice that you're avoiding and point that out to you, you can start to become more mindful of when you feel yourself avoiding. So with some of my clients, I've noticed that over time and working together, they'll start to say, I'm wanting to avoid and go down some rabbit hole or something like that. And so the more mindful you can be, the more you can notice yourself avoiding and bring it more into consciousness.
Yeah, that's helpful because I think sometimes it's easy to expect your therapist to notice. And especially if you're working with a newer therapist, I think sometimes it just takes time to like get to know each other and understand what's happening. So that's helpful.
Yes, that's very true. And if they're getting to know you as well, it may take them a little bit to realize which ways you avoid or trail off into something else. And so I think sometimes it's a matter of being patient with each other while you get to know each other and figure all of that out.
Definitely.
I think the biggest point I want to make about resourcing and coping skills is it is so important to learn how to shift from a state of distress to a state of resourcing. So later when you're doing trauma work, this is called titration. So it's a way of going in and out of the trauma in a way that doesn't leave you feeling flooded and overwhelmed. And this also, just with your symptoms in general, allows you to feel more in control of things that have oftentimes felt very out of control.
What did you mean by allowing you to feel more in control of things that feel very out of control?
What I mean by that is, I think for a lot of people, trauma symptoms just feel so out of control. You feel like if you start having a flashback, you can't make it stop. You feel like if you start having some sort of somatic symptom that you can't make it stop. And so as you learn resourcing and coping skills and those things come up day to day, you're able to start to manage some of those overwhelming feelings in a way that helps you to feel more in control of your life.
Okay, that makes sense. Can you tell me what avoidance looks like, in particular with dissociative identity disorder?
Yes. So I work with quite a few people with DID, and I think something that is common in DID is extreme avoidance of all the things I mentioned before, but also avoidance of knowing they have trauma, avoidance of believing it was as bad as it was, avoidance of different parts of themselves. And that really tends to be coming from what is referred to as the host personality or the apparently normal personality. And basically what that means is the part of self that is doing daily life, the parts that are less emotional but very functional and handle tasks like raising children, going to work, going to school, those kinds of things. And part of this is referred to as host resistance. I was watching a recording of a webinar that Colin Ross did, and he was talking about host resistance. But he says that in many ways, the host is really just doing their job. So doing daily living, staying out of the feelings. But ultimately, once you are safe, avoiding all of your internal experiences ends up being quite problematic.
So being able to acknowledge those experiences, well, maybe not, because it seems like there's a level of, if I'm understanding you correctly, there's a level of, I don't know if it's avoidance is the right word, but there's a level of like being able to live normal day-to-day life in a healthy, functional way. And being able to get through the day-to-day, you know, challenges of life, there's a level of that that you can't, I would imagine, if you're struggling with this, can't like completely be in some of those other parts or completely be, I guess what I'm trying to say is there a balance in being able to acknowledge different parts other than the host? Like, I'm just trying to understand, like, the dynamic at play. Because what are you supposed to do if you have DID and you're trying to get through day-to-day life and you don't want to ignore or not pay attention or avoid your parts, but you also, like, have to live day-to-day life? How do you navigate that, and what's the balance there?
Yes, your question makes a lot of sense. And I think it is very, very much a balance. And I think something to keep in mind is that you are able to keep all these memories, thoughts, feelings out of conscious awareness because other parts of your mind are holding memories, pain, trauma, among other things. And it does feel overwhelming to start to internally communicate and develop cooperation with those parts. Because really, you've been protected from a lot of that. And as far as balance goes, at times, you need to, I think it kind of goes back to this idea of going in and out of distress. So checking in with different aspects of your mind might happen in really small increments. And it might not be many, many times while you're at work, but it might be being intentional and setting aside specific time to do something with parts.
So not to live as if that's not a part of you, not to completely ignore, but to acknowledge in a way that isn't overwhelming and keeping you from doing what you need to do day to day to survive.
Yes. And as you start to get overwhelmed, you might need to let these different aspects of your mind know that you need to take a break. You know that they're there. You intend to come back to this, but you need to take a break in order to allow yourself to come back to it. Because if you get too overwhelmed, you will massively avoid dealing with parts. And so I guess, like, to speak to what avoiding can look like in DID, it can look like, I don't have parts or alters. I've had clients come in and say, I got rid of all of them. They're not here anymore. They disappeared. It can also just look like avoiding emotion. I hear a lot of people say, I don't want to have this. I just want to be normal. Which is hard because I think many people have this feeling of, I just want to be normal. But normal is really subjective. What may be normal to one person may not be normal to another. And so what I like to tell clients is, you're having a really normal response to experiencing abnormal, horrific experiences that have come across your life.
To get into more detail about it, what exactly are you referring to when you talk about these other parts that are not essential to everyday functioning?
So these different parts that I'm referring to are trauma holding parts, which can be referred to also as emotional parts of the personality. That's what Kathy Steele calls them.
Is Kathy Steele a researcher, or?
She's somebody who specializes in DID. So these parts have enabled you to survive trauma and neglect. And without these other parts of yourself, you may not be here today. And so I think it's important for people to understand, you really can't get rid of them. I think sometimes people come in and they say, how do I make these voices stop? How do I make them go away? There's not really a way to get rid of them or make them go away. There is a way to work towards, some people want to work towards integration, other people do not, but there's certainly a way to work towards more harmony and cooperation, collaboration, and communication.
What happens when people ignore parts?
Usually that does not go very well. That's whether your therapist says to you, I'm not going to deal with those other parts that you're talking about. I only want to talk to you, and I'm only going to refer to you by your name. I've had clients tell me lots of fun stories about how that goes. But sometimes people decide on their own that they don't want to deal with them and they just want to ignore parts. So I ask clients a lot what happens when they ignore parts. And they usually say some number of various crisis behaviors show up, which is not good. And so I typically tell people, if you ignore parts not long after, they will typically make themselves known to you. And I think across the board, I have seen that to be true. I would like to talk about avoidance specifically regarding one's needs. So this could be anybody with a trauma history all the way up through DID. So most of us don't like the feeling of being needy. It can make us feel dependent or weak. So oftentimes we'll ignore our own needs. So that could be not taking proper care of ourselves or ignoring ego states or alters that feel needy. That feeling of need that can show up from younger parts can feel scary. Sometimes with DID, little parts end up getting dumped out in therapy or with somebody else who seems to be nurturing, or even in some dangerous situations, if it feels like a need is going to be met, younger parts can be pushed out in an attempt to really have their needs met.
What exactly do you mean by dumped out or pushed out? What do you mean by that?
I mean that for those with DID, if a younger part of self comes to the surface and takes control of the body, that's what I'm talking about. So sometimes they either come out on their own or get pushed out by the host personality to the front and are looking to get needs met.
Okay.
And it definitely feels good when someone else takes care of those little parts, but it usually ends up being insufficient. It never really quite feels like enough. So I've had lots of instances where people have talked about with somebody, whether like a therapist or somebody else, takes care of the little ones a lot, and how it feels like no matter how much time they have with that person, it never feels like enough. And I think sometimes what's happening is when we don't want to deal with the needy part of ourselves, when we don't want to deal with needy self states or alters, part of what that does is it keeps us out of grieving. And when I say grieving, I mean grieving that your needs were not met as a child in the way that you needed them to be. And the truth is, once you're an adult, no one can go back and redo what you missed. And my heart really breaks for anybody who is dealing with this, because the grief there can be, and often is, really, really immense and feels really overwhelming. And many times people don't want to accept and face that their needs were not met as children. And I really do feel for you. But at some point, in order to heal, we need to learn to nurture, protect, and tend to younger parts of ourselves, whether we're talking about ego states or alters with DID. But it's really challenging because it takes a lot of hard work for clients to do this, to face that their needs weren't met, and to face that they then have to do this now.
To be able to go back and provide for those different parts' needs in the way that they weren't when they were actually at that age and in those experiences.
Yes, it really just looks like reparenting yourself and giving yourself what you didn't have as a child.
What are some practical things you can do when you feel yourself wanting to avoid, whether in therapy or outside of therapy?
When you find yourself wanting to avoid, sometimes that can just be a sign that you need to slow down, that maybe you're moving too fast or pushing yourself too hard. That's not always the case, but sometimes it is. And so the best advice I can give is to talk to your therapist about it. I try to give clients permission that if they ever are feeling like, I really don't want to come to therapy today, or I don't really want to talk about this thing today, to name that out loud. It's so helpful for your therapist to know what you're feeling. And I think it's completely normal sometimes to not want to go to therapy or to not want to talk about something, because it's a lot and it's overwhelming and you're talking about really difficult things. So definitely talk to your therapist about that. At other times, it might be a time to very slowly and carefully examine what is there. So if you're not in immediate danger and you actually are ready to start looking at some of this stuff, I think it's important to go really slow. You can ask yourself some questions like, why am I avoiding right now? How does avoiding impact me in a negative way? You can also ask yourself how avoiding was adaptive for you at one point, because it very likely was. If you have DID, you can create a list of evidence that you have, a list of facts that are undeniable that parts of you exist. Again, just the facts, so not making assumptions, not creating something that isn't there, but to really look at the facts. What evidence have you seen that parts of you exist? Then start to think about the results of avoiding. So how has that caused negative things to show up in your life when you avoid? Where has avoiding led you in the past? Has it led up to needing to be hospitalized? Has it led up to dropping out of therapy? Has it led up to feeling really chaotic and disorganized and confused inside? You may have to ask yourself some really difficult questions, but when you find yourself avoiding, I think it's important to examine where that's coming from.
Do you think it's important to have grace for yourself as well? Because I know that, I mean, I don't like going to therapy. I don't want to go into anything that is troubling for me, because it's really difficult and challenging. Like, where does that come in? Because I know it's been helpful for me to, like, be okay with myself for having that feeling of avoidance while also acknowledging it and knowing that that's not where I want to stay.
I think having grace and self-compassion is really important when it comes to avoidance. There is a reason that you're avoiding. Whatever is there must feel overwhelming to you in some way or another. And so I think it's really important to be gentle with yourself. Trauma survivors often struggle with black and white thinking. And so when we feel like we're avoiding, it can turn into something like, oh, I'm doing something wrong. I'm not doing therapy right. And there isn't any very specific right way of doing any of this. I think it's just a matter of continuing to come back to it, come back to it, come back to it, and continuing to work on things. You are going to have times when you avoid. You are going to make mistakes. You're human, and so that's really normal. And so try very hard to know that you can both avoid and come back to it, and it's still possible to heal.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to – is this episode 5, Natalie? I think so. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week.